work session number 13237, Reel 2.
I was transferred to a Cretan unit as a liaison officer. And I wasn't with them very long. I think about a fortnight, trying to help them and acting as a link between them and British troops and generally sort of as a liaison officer.
So this was a Greek army infantry unit?
Yes, yes.
Composed of Cretans?
Yes, it was a Cretan unit, I'm almost certain. Cretan. See, it wasn't very long, though. It was only a matter of... probably a matter of days.
What impression did they create?
Well, they were... they hadn't got very much in the way of... they were poor, very poorly equipped. But they had a very positive attitude. I mean, extremely... I won't say bellicose, but extremely positive in their attitude. They didn't want any Germans or anyone else invading their island. They were going to give them a stick when they did. Morale was pretty good. Unfortunately, what happened was that the landing of the Germans came in the middle of the day. And I was completely caught out. I seem to remember that I was adrift at the time. I was probably moving from one point to another, and suddenly this thing descends on one. Paratroops and terrific airstrike, of course, prior to the landing. And the thing rather virtually crumbled, in a sense, that it was... everybody was caught on the hop. And I found myself chasing around with a little group of mixed... anyone I could get hold of. I seem to remember two or three British in the little party that I was able to collect. We sort of went charging around trying to do something about these landings. But you appreciate that it came completely out of the blue in the middle of a day. And here one was, I suppose one was probably having lunch or something when it all started. One might be having lunch in one's billet. And I know that it was almost impossible to establish any form of contact because of the chaos which this invasion created initially. You see, they dropped on top of us. They miscalculated very badly indeed. And we were able, I mean, this sounds rather horrible, we were able to take pot shots while the chap's in the air, coming down.
Do you think you hit any of them?
Oh, undoubtedly we did. Quite a lot. I mean, their landing was what you might say a formality, in that they were just dead when they actually touched the ground. They hadn't a chance. They landed right on top of fortified... or if not fortified positions, they landed on top of people with arms in their hands with which to cope with the situation. But you can imagine utter confusion. Don't forget the initial airstrike, which of course had been fairly explosive, fairly dynamic.
Were you firing at them with rifles? Or
well, everything we had in our hands. Anything we could lay hands on.
Bren guns?
No, we didn't have a Bren gun. I never, certainly the Cretans. And of course the Cretan show, you see, they tended to, I won't say disintegrate, but it seemed as if they became, I think what the best way to define it is, they became a whole crowd of little guerrilla units operating very independently one of another, some of them very poorly armed, anxious to lay their hands on any of the enemy they could get hold of, I suspect they're spoiling the dead, if you understand me. They weren't averse to that.
How do you mean? Thieving from them?
Yes. Stripping them and even mutilating. I don't know. No, perhaps that's not fair. But they're very, very sort of worked up and pretty bloodthirsty characters. Glad to have them as a friend rather than an enemy. But as a, an effective, unified fighting force, completely non-existent.
So you were with the Cretan unit?
Well, I was, yes, but the Cretan unit was spread about. And of course, once the battle actually started, that spread about became, as I've described, a sort of massive guerrilla operation in little groups. And it was impossible to get any sort of cohesion into it. In fact, I really found myself being rather useless. Not much one could do. And eventually one joined, one went back to one's regiment, to one's battalion, and found oneself a useful job there, because there was nothing really one could do in terms of liaison with a force which had ceased to exist as a coherent fighting unit.
Yes.
Clear? You see, the Germans made a great mistake in dropping these troops right on top of, dropping the first drop right on top of us. But they very quickly realised where they'd gone wrong. And thereafter, I suppose, from after the first afternoon drop, when they realised what a hammering they'd taken, all the dropping was done outside our range. And we were, in Heraklion, a sort of siege unit, if you can imagine it. If you can imagine the town of Heraklion, there we were on the outskirts, holding the town, so to speak, and port. There's a little harbour there. And the Germans realised that they'd made a nonsense there, and all the reinforced drops were outside our range. We just had to sit there and watch, and were unable to do anything. And you must appreciate that we had no air retaliation at all. There was nothing. The RAF were desperately strung out. They were concentrating their efforts down in Heraklion, down in Khanir in Suda Bay. Such fighters as were available were down there. We saw an RAF plane the whole time we were fighting this German landing.
So were you being dive-bombed?
We were. We had, but I think the Germans were a bit cautious because it was a desperately close-run thing. They could come down and they'd be planking the bombs in the middle of their own troops, if you follow. Because we were occupying a fairly restricted perimeter defence, and the attacking units were, well, they were nibbling away at us from, and you could appreciate that the two were so close that the Luftwaffe were possibly a little reluctant to go too hard at us. I don't remember the bombing being very trying, actually, on land. Certainly we were bombed, of course, but not once after the first strike, the initial strike, before the parachutists landed. That was rough, but the rest of it from the air wasn't too troublesome. In fact, we were more than holding our own, you know, in Heraklion. We were quite well provided for. We had reasonable stores, we had reasonable ammunition, you know, all that sort of stuff. And we were holding our own, doing very nicely, thank you. Weren't suffering heavy casualties, not at all. And then suddenly, one afternoon, out of the blue, we get the orders. Tonight you're out, boys. We couldn't understand it.
Were there any Australian or New Zealand troops with you at Heraklion?
I think not.
What did you think of the way in which the Germans fought against you?
Well, in fact, they nibbled away at us, and we nibbled away at them, but quite frankly, there was no attempt by the invading forces to really get to grips with us. It was more or less sitting and waiting on both sides. It wasn't very active stuff. They never launched a wholesale attack against us. I suspect what was happening was that they were concentrating their main efforts on the Suda Bay area, and that was where they were having successes. And I rather think that, particularly having been given an initial rough, slightly bloody nose at Heraklion, that probably thereafter they regarded that as a sideshow and just simply kept a little bit of reinforcing just to sort of keep us occupied, but not with sufficient strength to take Heraklion, because they knew it was going to happen from the other end, or they could see it that way. I'm only surmising, mind you.
Did you get a view of the enemy at any stage? After
not you... overall, no. No. I mean, we would be sitting in our olive groves, in our trenches, waiting for them to come, and I think we did a bit of patrolling. But I can't remember, to be quite frank, that we had very much encounter after that first day. From there on, until the sudden news came that we were to get out, it was a waiting game for us in Heraklion.
So had your unit suffered any casualties?
No. Very, very few indeed. Very few.
What? Did the order to withdraw come in the middle of the night?
No, it came, I should say, probably the middle of the day. You're going out tonight. That sort of thing.
How was it accomplished?
After dark, we simply got out of our positions and trooped down to the docks. The dock, little harbour. Now there, one had a most unusual experience. As usual, because the Navy was involved in it, things were pretty orderly and well controlled, i.e. the exact embarkation itself. And one simply arrived at the harbour and got on board a destroyer.
Did you learn its name?
I cannot remember. It's a pity, because it's quite an interesting... Mind you, the records, this must be in the records. What happened was that one got aboard and we were pretty damn tired. I mean, we'd had a week of short of sleep. I mean, I know I say that we were not very active, but at the same time, you know, we were very much on the alert, and we'd had a fairly hard week, in a way. Anyway, doss down. That's the only thing you can do. You get on board you're herded together, obviously, on a destroyer. I managed to find a cabin floor, and I lay down on this floor. I was just going off when the owner of the cabin arrived. I got permission to go to it. I wasn't usurping. But he turned up. He said, get up and get out, quick, get ashore. So I said, what do you mean, get out, quick? So I go on top, and my God, we'd started, by the way. We were moving. One could feel the pulse of the boat. But we'd only been moving about 5 minutes. And you get up, and there we are alongside another of our destroyers. We get off our destroyer onto the other one, pull away and sink the ship that we'd been on. We put a torpedo into her. What had happened? Apparently, ship number one, our ship, just as she was going into harbour that evening, her steering gear was damaged. How, I don't know. But what was happening was we were going round in circles. And, of course, no naval ship, or indeed no Allied ship of any kind, could live there in daylight. they'd simply be bombed out of sight straight away. So what could they do? They simply put us on to another destroyer and sank ours. Tragic. I mean, all was wrong. It was probably a steerage fault, which could have been put right in the docks in a matter of weeks. But that's war, isn't it? So here we were, even more congested, if you can imagine. And we had a hell of a ghastly voyage home. Back to Alexandria. That was the worst part of the whole operation, as far as we were concerned. Because we were literally sort of piled together like sardines. Below decks, you appreciate. Below decks. So all we could hear was the most infernal noise upstairs, i.e. ourselves hammering away. An almost persistent air attack from the moment to dawn on May, whatever it was, pretty early the dawn, until we were within range of our own fighter cover in Egypt. So in other words, I suppose we had upwards of 6 or 7 hours persistent bombardment from the air. We were lucky, we weren't hit, but a cruiser in our convoy took a frightful hammering, and they put a bomb right in the middle of her, down into the crowded hole. Lots of casualties, lots of troops killed. But there we were. We go to Alexandria, back. And that was it. That was Crete.
So you got out without hardly any casualties?
Well, my battalion had very few casualties, I'm sure of that. I can't remember having... No, practically none. Practically none.
What happened to the battalion in Alexandria?
Well, we went into transit camp to rest for a bit. I think we were given leave. I know we were given leave because I was able to contact my parents in the UK to say that I was all right. Which I did which happened in a rather unusual way, in that the first thing I needed on getting to Crete, getting to Alexandria, was money. Because we were going on leave and needed some money. And I remember my bank manager had to be contacted. And it was he who rang my parents up and said, "We've had a communication from Alexandria that your son needs money." So that told them that I was all right. I think they knew I was in Crete, you see, somehow or other. I think we were called Creforce or something rather unimaginative like that in the early days. And I was writing to them from Creforce or some such. Anyway, I'm fairly sure they knew I was in Crete.
What was the attitude of the Egyptians to the Allied forces?
What a wonderful question. They were mostly interested I must be careful what I say. Yes, they were mainly interested in getting everything out of us they could, and they didn't care a damn how they got it. And if they were selling us, they could sell us anything. Women, boys, you name it, anything you wanted. You can just imagine it. And the old Gippo was really taking full advantage of the situation. You couldn't help admiring his undeviating pertinacity and sort of... extracting the last ounce out of the bottle.
Did they seem to have any attitude politically? Politically,
I think you could say that it varied very much according to what the situation was like overall. In other words, when we were holding our own, they were quite chummy. But I suspect that when Rommel really started to exert his personality on the region, I suspect the Egyptian attitude changed. But I really didn't see enough of them because one was either up in the line, up in the sort of wherever the line was, or one was perhaps on leave and for a week or something, and when you were on leave, you lived in luxury of a good hotel in Cairo, Alexandria, just living it up a bit. But you didn't really sort of take in the Egyptian. You had to be stationed in Cairo or Alex to really understand the Egyptian attitude. But I'm fairly certain it changed according to... Because I always think, you know, that if you want a picture of Alexandria, you can't beat Gerald Durrell's marvellous, marvellous books, the Alexandrine Quartet. However, that's by the way.
Is the picture he paints an accurate one?
Marvellous. Absolutely brilliant. But we were, as far as I can remember, we were rested for a short time. Then I suspect we were moved up to Tobruk. Or did we go to Syria first? It's so difficult to remember, you know. Get the chronology of this.
It was, I would imagine it was probably Syria first, because as far as I know, the Syrian campaign was in June or July 1941,
yes,
shortly after the
Crete campaign. Yes, that's right. I think you're right.
Can you tell me what you did in Syria, in the Syrian campaign?
Well, not, yes, we arrived on the scene when it was almost over. And we were put out onto mountaintops near Zahle, Z-A-H-L-E, I remember that very well. Very lovely area of the Lebanon. Beautiful, beautiful area. But it wasn't a particularly beautiful place to be because it was midsummer, yes, you're right, June, and it was blazing hot. And we were stuck out on these mountains without a breath of shade. And it was very, very uncomfortable. And of course, we were fighting the Vichy, which seemed an awful waste of time and effort. So so the whole thing was pretty mighty unpleasant. It was physically demanding in the appalling heat. But it wasn't for long. I mean, I'm talking about a matter of a few days. And we didn't take much in the way of casualties, and such casualties as well were mainly heat stroke. It was so hot.
And so was it mainly the Vichy Air Force that you came into contact with, or their ground
forces? No, I think their ground forces. We must have had some sort of skirmishes with them, but it was nothing very... I suspect that by the time we arrived on the scene, they'd made up their minds not to put much more effort into the campaign. I know very little about the Syrian campaign as such, as to what it did entail in terms of fighting. Certainly as far as we were concerned, we arrived at the end. We sat on these mountain tops and took pot shots at a few Vichy French, and they took a few pot shots at us. And I don't think there was any air conflict of any kind. And then there was a ceasefire. Mighty glad we were to get out of this ghastly heat spot.
And then you went back to Egypt?
Must have done. Back to Egypt and then up to Tobruk. Now, I think we arrived in Tobruk into a besieged town or besieged area. I believe it was already under siege when we arrived.
So you went in Royal Navy ships?
Oh, yes. Ferried up. Once again, the Navy absolutely bloody marvellous. Wonderful.
What kind of a ship did you go?
As a destroyer, I think. To be honest, I can't remember, but I suspect a destroyer. Or a frigate. Small ship.
Were you attacked on the way?
No, not that I can remember. No. You see, it's not very long, not very far. And the trip was mainly, I think they made it at night.
What did you find in Tobruk when you got there?
shortage of supplies. Supplies were very tight. After all, it was under siege. And we had enough to live on, just. But it was, it was a little bit hairy on that aspect, the supply situation. I spent time there with Australians. I was seconded to an Australian battalion, again in a liaison capacity. And that was a very interesting experience. I lived with these Australians in what was, in fact, an Italian fortified post to Brook QC, having been initially garrisoned and defences dug by the Italians, and they made a very thorough job of it. I mean, these were concrete emplacements, concrete dugouts, very well positioned, very well manufactured. And I was there with this Australian battalion, living with the colonel, I think, and his staff as a liaison. Very interesting. And I got to like the Australians very much. They were good value.
Why did you like them so much?
Well, they were very unstuffy. Much less, how should I put it? Much freer, that's the way to put it, in their relationships among themselves, between officers and men, for instance. Much more relaxed. There was less saluting, less yes sir, no sir, a bit more outspokenness, which was quite refreshing. I'm not saying they were undisciplined. I'm not suggesting that for one moment. They were very well disciplined, but it was a different attitude. With them, it worked. They were a jolly good unit, good fighting unit, and they acquitted themselves extremely well, I'm sure. And I certainly enjoyed my time with them. They were good blokes to be with.
Were their methods more or less the same as British Army methods?
Yes, basically, yes. Yes, I mean, they were setting about the business of defending Tobruk much as a British unit would have done.
And the same weapons?
Yeah, similar weapons. And of course, facing up to the same shortages as the British units were.
Was their attitude towards the war more or less the same as the British attitude?
Yes, I would say so. Yes, they were doing a job just as we were doing a job. None of us were enjoying it particularly, and we were thinking, what the hell is it all about? But I would have thought that there was a parallel there.
So, was there any sign of any attitude of, why are we here thousands of miles from home when our own home?